This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. After years of acting obscurity, Chaz Palminteri is doing good. He co-stars in Woody Allen's latest film, Bullets Over Broadway. He plays a small-time gangster forced to babysit his boss's actress girlfriend. She's a lousy actress, preparing for a part the director was strong-armed into giving her. Here's Palminteri in a scene where he's reluctantly rehearsing with her. The actress is played by Jennifer Tilly.
Can't you see? You're living out the exact same pattern your mother lived out with your father.
I am? Pray tell.
In some way, you're trying to relive it, and in the process of reliving it, correct it. As if that were possible. Ha!
It don't say ha.
Oh, don't say hi. I added that.
What do you mean you added that? Are you allowed to do that?
We're allowed to add things.
How could you just add something?
You're allowed to add things. It's called ad-libbing.
You can't do that.
I can do that. What do you know? You don't know nothing. Shut up and read.
I think the whole thing stinks,
all right? I think you're a degenerate zombie. Shut up and read.
Just shut up.
You shut up.
You're lucky you're Nick's girl.
You're lucky you're an idiot.
Well, it turns out this gangster has a natural gift for writing. And there is a parallel in Palminteri's life. His acting career took off after he wrote a semi-autobiographical one-man show for himself. Inspired by the show's success, he adapted it into the film A Bronx Tale. Robert De Niro directed the film and co-starred with Palminteri. It was Palminteri's breakthrough role. I talk with him first about Bullets Over Broadway. I asked Palminteri if Woody Allen wrote the role for him or if he had to read for the part.
We were editing Bronx Tale at the time, Bob De Niro and myself, and then I got a call that Woody Allen wanted to meet me. So I went down to his studio. I walked in, and I said hi, and we talked for about 30 seconds. And then he said, would you mind reading a scene for me? And I said, no, not at all. I read a scene, and he said, that was it. Thank you. So I left. And I got a call about 5 days later that he would like to see me again. I went in, I walked in, and he said, how are you? I said, fine. He said, you know, would you really mind reading just one more scene for me? And I said, no, I have no problem with that at all, Woody. And I read another scene for him, and he said, thank you. And I walked out, and about an hour later, they called me, and they said, I got the part.
What did you relate to in your role as Cheech, the gangster who turns out to have an incredible gift for writing?
Besides being an actor, I am a writer. So I really tuned in to Cheech. I really felt what he felt about, you know, standing his ground. I mean, that's very similar to what happened to me in A Bronx Tale. In fact, when I wrote Bronx Tale, the one-man show, and I performed it on stage, everyone loved it and all the studios wanted it, but they didn't want me in the role. They just wanted a star in the role. And so I just held my ground. The offers kept getting higher and higher, and I just still held my ground. Even when the offers reached seven figures, I still said no. Until finally, they made the movie with me, with the help of, obviously, Robert De Niro, who saw me on stage and said, hey, you would be great in the role. I'll play Lorenzo. I'll direct it. Let's make the movie.
Why did you hold out until you could star in it? Why didn't you just take the money and run?
Because this was my shot, and I was not going to let it go away. I mean, a lot of people said I was crazy, that it wasn't going to happen, that I was going to blow the whole deal, but I really believed in myself and knew that this movie was going to get made because it was just too good.
So you ended up getting the part and the money.
Yes, I did.
You did good.
That's correct.
A Bronx Tale, the movie which grew out of your one-man show, is pretty autobiographical. And it's about a boy who witnesses a murder and then refuses to talk with the police about it.
Right.
And the local mob head, in thanks to the kid for not talking to the police, takes him under his wing. And then the kid's father and the mobster kind of fight for control over the kid's mind. Did you witness a murder when you were young?
Yes, I did. I witnessed a murder when I was about 9. I sat on my stoop. Basically, just the way it happened in the movie, that's the way it happened. Except I didn't have to the cops didn't bring me down. I didn't have to witness anything. You know, I mean, I didn't have to, like, point anybody out of a lineup. That I just wrote for dramatic purposes.
For our listeners who may not have seen the movie, would you describe what you saw?
I was sitting on my stoop, and there was two cars parking. They were fighting for a parking space, and one guy got out with a baseball bat and broke the window of the guy in the back trying to sneak in the space, and the other guy got out with a gun and killed him.
Now, in the movie, the kid assumes, wow, what a fight over a parking spot.
Right, I thought it was over a parking space, but years later I found out it wasn't.
What was it about?
I never found out what it was about, but I knew it wasn't over a parking space. My father would never tell me.
So it was about some mob thing or another?
It was a street thing. God knows what it was about.
Now, did the mob guy who did the hit become your mentor, as in the movie?
No. There was basically what I did was the guy was a conglomeration of a lot of different characters that I knew, and some of myself. It was just this basic thing that I wanted to put the working man against the mafiosa and the boy in the middle.
So did you hang out with wise guys?
Yes, I did, yeah. Yeah, and back in those days in the neighborhood, everybody hung out together, Terry. It was a very unique thing. Bad guys and good guys all hung out on the corner. It was very different back then. And when one guy had to do something, he just walked away and did what he had to do. So we all kind of like melted into each other.
Was there anything you found seductive about that world?
Well, when you're very young, it's impressionable. You see the cars, the money, the women, the clothes. You know, you think that's what life's about. But as you get older, you realize what my father was telling me, that the working man was really the tough guy. It doesn't take much strength to pull the trigger. It, you know, takes a lot of strength to get up in the morning and work for a living.
So, you know, when you were, what, 9 when you saw the murder?
Yes.
Did it scare you? What impact did it have on you?
No, it didn't scare me. It just stayed in my... people always ask me that. It's the amazing thing was, when the guy killed him, he just kind of turned and stared at me. And I stared at him, and our eyes met, and he was looking at me. And, I mean, it's so long ago, and I think he was looking at me with the eyes of, like, my God, I'm sorry this kid had to see this. And that's what it felt like to me when I go back and I remember it. And then the next thing I knew, my father grabbed me by my arm and dragged me upstairs.
What did your father say to you?
He just said, my father wouldn't talk about it. He said, forget it. And I said, but Daddy, it was a parking space. What? He said, forget it. He would not talk about it. I mean, he's the old school Sicilian, you know. When something like that was done in the neighborhood, you don't talk about it.
What do you think would have happened to you if you did talk about it?
I don't know. It wouldn't have been good. I mean, we probably would have had to pack up and move. I don't know.
Have you spoken to your father about that incident?
Yes.
As an adult?
Yes.
And what?
He says still the same thing. I said, Dad, now that it's over, years have gone by, and it's a movie, and everybody knows about it, what was it about? And he still gives me the same answer. You know, things, people, stakes. He speaks in non sequiturs. You know, he still never tells me. Will not say it.
Now, how do you think he knows?
He knows. I know he knows, because I can look in his eyes and he smiles.
My guest is actor Chaz Palminteri. We'll be back after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is actor Chaz Palminteri, co-star of Bullets Over Broadway. He also wrote the screenplay for and co-starred in the film A Bronx Tale. It's based on his childhood memories of gangsters in the neighborhood. Palminteri plays a gangster who takes a kid under his wing after the kid witnesses a murder but doesn't squeal. Here's Palminteri trying to win over the kid.
So you must be pretty upset after the Yankees lost.
Bill Mazeroski. I hate him. He made Mickey Mantle cry. Paper said that the Mick was crying.
Mickey Mantle, is that what you're upset about? Mickey Mantle makes $100,000 a year. How much does your father make?
I don't know.
You don't know? Well, see, if your father can't pay the rent, go ask Mickey Mantle, see what he tells you. Mickey Mantle don't care about you, so why should you care about him? Nobody cares.
Can I ask you something?
Sure.
Did you shoot that man over parking space?
When you get older, you'll understand.
Now, how did you get interested in acting?
It was something that I always wanted to do. Acting was something that was always inside of me. I remember seeing Marlon Brando and On the Waterfront, and I said, my God, you know, how does he do that? You know, it was just something inside of me that I always wanted to do.
What were some of the early roles that you got in TV shows and in movies?
I did a show called Wise Guy for a while. I played a governor, a district attorney who was running for governor, which was really nice. And then I did another wise guy where I played the head of the mafia, which was totally opposite.
Was there something that functioned as the last straw for you in deciding, well, I'm going to just write my own show and take control of my own career because I don't like the direction
right.
I'm heading in?
There was. I was, you know, doing television work and really trying to keep, above water. And I was working at a doorman at a club in Los Angeles at the time. And I walked in one day and the doorman and the owner said to me, listen, I have to let you go. And I said, why? He says, well, I just change doorman every 6 months. That's just the way I do things. So I got basically fired, you know, right there. And I was really upset about it. And he said, I'm sorry, you did a great job, but this is the way it is. And I walked out. I got in my beat up 1974 Honda with a big dent on the side. I drove back to North Hollywood. I was living in this one room dump there. And I sat on the edge of my bed and I said, I looked in the mirror and I said, I cannot believe my life is, you know, I cannot get above water. I felt like I had all this talent, but I couldn't really, you know, I couldn't really show it. So I said, well, if they won't give me a great part, I'm going to write my own. I got back in my car, drove to Thrifty Drugstore. I got 5 tabs of yellow legal paper and I started to write A Bronx Tale. And I turned my life around.
So when you decided to write A Bronx Tale, you knew that you'd kind of draw on your past and then...
Exactly. Well, I knew that, you know, I always wanted to write about that killing I saw when I was 9 years old. So I just wrote this 5-minute monologue. I started it there. Then each week I would go back and write a little. I would write a lot during the week and I would perform it on Monday nights.
Now, when you were doing this as a one-man show, you did, what, like 18 different parts or something?
18 different characters, right.
So who were some of the characters that you took on?
Well, there's Eddie Mush, the born loser. You know, they called him Eddie Mush because everything he touched turned to mush. He was just totally a loser. There was Frankie Coffee Cake. He had a face like it looked like a Drake's Coffee Cake. He had all this acne. There was Jojo the Whale, who was like as big as a house. I mean, you know, people used to say you didn't walk with Jojo, you walked among him. The guy was so big he had his own zip code, they used to say. I mean, it was really, I mean, there were funny stories about a lot of these guys.
Were these guys real?
Yes, a lot of them were, yeah, sure. Eddie Mush was in the movie. I put him in Bronx Tale.
Oh, no, what did he play?
He played Eddie Mush.
Oh.
He played himself. I was a little worried because, I mean, he's such a loser that I was afraid he was going to jinx the movie. You know, I really got scared by it. In fact, the first day he showed up on the set, it rained, and we had to, like, go to a cover set, which I said, oh, my God, I can't believe this.
So did being in the movie change his luck?
Well, he made him a lot of money. I don't know where it is now. I mean, knowing Eddie, he probably used the racetrack. Who knows?
So were you anxious to see what people from the neighborhood thought of the movie?
Yeah. A lot of them really liked it a lot.
And the others?
Some of them just thought that, you know, well, you know, you portrayed the neighborhood, it was a little racist. And I said, well, it was racist. You know, there was a lot of the neighborhood wasn't like that, but some of it was. I mean, to portray the good, you have to say some of the bad. It's just that simple. Don't get me wrong. It's a wonderful, wonderful neighborhood. I loved it. Hardworking people. But was it a little racist sometimes? Absolutely.
Well, where the racism comes in the movie is that the teenager playing you has a crush on...
Right. On a black girl.
On a black teenager, right. Yeah. And so as they're trying to kind of get together, meanwhile, all of his friends in the neighborhood right. are just... like beaten up on young black men who
right.
who come through the neighborhood, and that leads to kind of bigger and bigger fights and to
right.
other plot twists I won't get into. But were there things like that going on in the neighborhood where if a black kid came into the neighborhood,
absolutely,
he'd have to be careful of his life
all the time. Yes, at that time, yes, absolutely.
And did you ever go along with that?
In the beginning, I did, yes. But then in the end, I started to realize this was wrong. You know, why were we fighting with people just because they were a different color than us? I thought it was wrong. And I wanted to show in the movie where, if you remember that little scene that I wrote, the scene between Slick and little Collodio and the young boy when they're 9, sitting on a stoop and the bus goes by with the black kids in it, and the boy throws a stickball bat at them, and he says, what are you doing? He says, they're just driving through. And he says, they're coming from school. So the little Slick says, well, how do you know? He says, well, my father told me. And Slick says, well, that's because, yeah, well, my father told me that's how it starts. You know, so I wanted to show how racism, you know, and hatred is bred down from one generation to the next in that little incident right there. And what happens when Slick, when he gets older, you know, it ends up being his demise. He dies from that.
Actor Chaz Palminteri is my guest. He stars in the new movie Bullets Over Broadway, Woody Allen's film, and he also wrote and starred in A Bronx Tale, which was directed by Robert De Niro. Now, you wrote a screenplay that you're starring in the movie of. Paul Mazursky is directing it. It's called Faithful.
That's correct.
I think it's scheduled to open in 1995. What's it about?
Faithful is a script. It was originally a play that I wrote, and I adapted it into a screenplay. It's about a guy who... this guy's a hitman. He gets sent to kill, we think he gets sent to kill this woman who lives in this big mansion upstate with her husband. Her husband hired him because his wife cheated on him once. He's been cheating on her for the past 20 years. She cheated on him once, which he says to the guy, and he wants her dead. But we don't really know who's lying. It's kind of like this thriller. It's funny. It's very touching. But it's like we never know who's telling the truth until the end.
Now, some Italian-American actors complain that they're always forced into these mafia hitman kind of roles. Mm. And you're writing roles like that for yourself.
Yeah.
Tell me why you're so interested in it. Does it date back to that killing you witnessed when you were 9, or is there something else behind it?
Well, it's a very good way for me to explore these universal themes that I like to explore. One was in Bronx Tale was the mafioso against the working man. In Fateful, it's basically good and evil. It's about infidelity and about what makes a man fateful and what makes a woman fateful. You know, if a woman's afraid to cheat on her husband, does that really make her fateful? If a man is too ugly to find somebody else, does that really make him fateful? You know, it's about put people in the position when they have money, do they change? You know, what does money do to a human being? And that's what I wrote about in Fateful. And that's what the movie's about.
What do your parents have to say about the success you've been having and about the ability to actually see you on the big screen?
Well, I mean, the big benefit that I have is that I've always said, excuse me, because my parents were so instrumental in my success, where my father and mother would always push me and said that, you know, you're going to make it. Even when I was 9, 10 years old, they used to say, you're going to make it, you're special, something's going to happen, trust us. So they gave me the confidence to really maybe when I had to hold out for all that money at that time, I really had it. And I got to say that they were like my backbone there. So now it's like really great. You know, I bought them a great place in Florida and they had a new car and they're really so happy with my success. I mean, I get more happiness watching them be happy for me than I am for myself, to be honest with you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Chez Palminteri co-stars in Bullets Over Broadway. This is Fresh Air.